Welcome. My name is Julian Schlossberg, and the name of our show is Movie Talk. My guest today is an Emmy Award-winning TV host. She's also a stand-up comedian. She's also an actress. She's also had her own radio show. She's also an author. She's also a playwright. She's been on the View since its inception, which this August will be 29 years. But her name is Joy Behar, and I'm so happy, Joy, to have you to talk to today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So off we go to Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
That's right.
In an Italian home, even though so many people think you're Jewish. An Italian home. Tell us about this building where a lot of relatives lived together.
Well, you know, Williamsburg has a Jewish section even to this day. Orthodox Jews, I think.
That's and right.
There was this little pocket of Italians, and that was us. And so it was in a tenement building. We lived on the fifth floor. We had no elevators, up and down. My mother must have slept my carriage up and down. My father, you know, that's how they stayed in shape, I think, in those days. So it was an interesting upbringing. It was a lot of interesting characters around. Like right now, it's very yuppie. It's yuppified. And if I was growing up there now, I don't know if I would have the same personality that I have. I don't think so. I used to hang out. I hung out in front of a mozzarella store.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, Joy, when you grow up, and you told me once that no one ever said, Joy, be quiet.
That's true. No one ever said to keep quiet. Once in a while, my grandmother was on the third floor. We were on the fifth. She'd say, Joy, your mother's calling you, trying to get rid of me. And I said, I don't hear that.
I don't hear her.
But no one ever said to be quiet. And that's why I'm a talk show person.
Well, that's why you are who you are. I mean, that's really to be brought up with a lot of love is a big head up, really a big leg to start on. Really,
it's true.
Is.
It's true. Yeah. One of my friend's kids said he had love to burn. I love that.
I like that. I heard you once say that it was great, except that New Year's Eve, they too much pressure on you to come there a lot.
No, what would happen is, you know, they were always pretty jolly, you know, and parties. There were a lot of people around all the time. And then New Year's Eve would be like, oh, let's all cry now about all the people who died. And I would be like the little comedian running around trying to cheer them up because it was overwhelming, the kind of, you know, grief that I was experiencing. I couldn't stand it. No. So I would try to cheer them up. The New York Times called me a compulsive mood lightener. And they were very accurate because that's how it was as a kid.
Well, that is nice. Herb Gardner, the writer we both knew, Thousand Clowns and I'm That Rappaport, wonderful writer, once said, Italians are happy Jews.
Anyhow, they are, whatever.
So let's talk about the influence of your mom and dad. What would you say, if looking back, were the influences from both of them, besides love, obviously?
Well, one was overwhelmingly loving, and the other was basically ignoring me. And the combination met somewhere in the middle. My father was a gambler. So, you know, like one time I saw him, he looked like he was having a seizure. And he was just listening to the results from Belmont.
but it wasn't good, though.
No. Well, we never knew when he won or when he lost. My Aunt Julie would say, all the guys in the neighborhood, when they win, they take the whole family out to dinner. We never know when your father won. I said, that's because he puts it right back in.
Yes, but he drove a truck for Coca-Cola. Was that right?
That's correct. And blue collar, working class, all the way across. My mother was a sewing machine operator.
Oh yes, did you become a seamstress yourself?
No, I don't. I don't know how to make a hem.
Now tell me, when did the acting bug, the comic bug? Were you a class clown?
I was funny as a child. Yes, I would make the Fuller Brush Man laugh. Remember the Fuller Brush Man?
I do, of course. I remember milk being delivered to my house in the Bronx.
Yes, the milk would come, the Fuller Brush Man would come, the Biangolin Man, that was the man with the stuff that you bleach your clothes with. They would deliver. Yeah.
Do you ever remember, Joy, a guy coming up the street going, I cash, clothes?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll forget that then.
No.
So,
no,
but last the, clown.
The Philip Rush man would come and say, "Joy, do Jerry Lewis." And I would like break into Jerry Lewis. I just was like a little crazy kid, being funny in school, et cetera. And then I always say my family gave me everything, all the support, the audience. The only thing they never gave me was an agent. And that I really could have used. Yeah. So it took me till I was almost 40 to get into the business.
Is that true? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you, though, about performing. Did you have the bug? Did you see a Broadway show as a young kid?
Yes, how did everything, The King and I, The Pajama Game. I saw all the Broadway shows, and I had the bug, but I didn't have the confidence, you know, to let's do it. I tried to go to the High School of Performing Arts, and I auditioned, and the first audition was a hit because there were all these people, like my aunts and uncles, around laughing at what I was doing. Then the second audition, they had a callback, and there was this one very stern guy sitting there, and he didn't laugh, and I just blew it, and I didn't get in. So I was always at the mercy of what the situation was, you know?
Yeah, well, the only good thing about that story, it prepared you for rejection in the business.
That's a very much an important thing to be prepared for because it's big and it's frequent.
That's right. And you were a kid, so it wasn't so bad to learn it at an early age. Were you crushed? Do you remember if you were crushed by it?
A little bit. I was a little crushed.
Yeah.
My life would have been different. I would have started my showbiz career much earlier if I had gotten into that school.
Into that school.
Instead, I became a high school English teacher. You know, I went.
Well, wait, before you do that. How about this? What's an employment counselor? What the hell is that?
Oh, at one point, in my 20s, I worked at the New York State Employment Service. I would tell people were getting laid off, and I would try to get them into other jobs.
I see. So that was that. Then high school English teacher was next. And
I got my degree, my extra credits, and I became a high school English teacher.
What do you remember any of the curriculum that you had to teach?
No, it was a long time.
Yeah. But you weren't there long?
Teaching? I did teaching for several years into my 30s, yeah. And then I had a baby and I cut back on that. Whatever. Who remembers? Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to for you. Good Morning America. You start as a receptionist.
Oh, that's a whole other story. So now.
Well, that's why I'm here, babe.
Okay, so let's say I'm around 38 years old now. The kid is like 8 years old or so. So it's, you know, she's going to school. And I get a job as a receptionist at Good Morning America. And I'm a rather terrible receptionist. I'm not good at it because I'm kind of overqualified. I have a master's degree. I was an English teacher. And now I'm answering phones. So I was a little on the hostile side.
So did they fire you or make you a producer or both?
I've always gets fired. I've been fired so many times. I keep waiting for The View to fire me so that I can just say, all right, I'm done. But they don't.
Wait a second. You told me once that Barbara fired you twice.
She did. Barbara Walters fired me. The first time she fired me because I jumped the gun on announcing that Rosie O'Donnell was coming on the show. She worked the airplane. Don't mention it. Keep your mouth shut. Don't tell it. I'm going to announce it on the Emmys. And it's stupid me. Entertainment Tonight comes up to me at the Emmys. What do you think about Rosie coming on the show? And I say, I think it's great. The next thing I know, she's firing me.
Wow.
But then she reneged on that. She thought better of it. You know.
I kind of like the story. I remember something to the effect that you'd said, what about you on Oprah with your book?
Well, what happened was after I was fired, the second time, I think. No, that was the first time. Diane Sawyer got wind of it, and she announced it. So let's say it was a Thursday, and then she announced it on Friday on her show. And Barbara said to me, you've been here all these years. Couldn't you wait to announce it on our show? And I didn't announce it. Diane found out. I said, well, you brought your book to Oprah. You didn't do it on The View. And she said, two wrongs don't make a right.
Now, did you study at HB Studios? Is that true?
You know everything about me.
I'm trying to, but by tomorrow, I'll have to find someone else. But today, it's Joy Day.
Okay. Yes, I did study at HB Studios with Alice Spivak and Steven Strumpel, two very good teachers.
I know that Uda talked there, and also Bill Hickey, I remember, too.
Yes, Bill Hickey. I think I was in a class with him for a while. He was very good.
Yeah, he was a good teacher, yeah. And a wonderfully nice man, too. I want to ask you...
Is Bill Hickey still with us?
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Is Bill Hickey still with us?
No. Oh, no. No.
Uda, too, is gone.
Yeah, anybody that we really care about is gone. That's what happens when you live to our age.
Anyone who's older than me is dead.
I want to find out about a show. Your first Broadway show is Comedy Tonight that I'm aware of. And I worked with Alex. I don't know. Alex Cohn was a very famous producer, not known for his directing. And yet he was your director on that show, wasn't he?
It wasn't like that. It was people doing stand-up.
Right. I know. You had Dorothy Loudon and Mort Saul and yourself.
There was a juggler also. It was like vaudeville or something. Yeah. And I did my set, and Mort Saul did his, and Dorothy did hers, etc. And that was it. And it lasted a week.
Yeah, it was six performances. That's right.
Yeah.
That's heartbreaking, unless you felt it was pretty bad as an evening.
I didn't care about it. It was all
really?
Right. Yeah, it was all really? Right. On to something else. I like to move on. That's why The View is the only place I haven't moved on from.
Well, I know. And I also want to let you know that if you had a coat of arms, I would say it should be the Energizer Bunny. That's you. I've done work with you. I've gone through your career. It's unbelievable. And we're only touching the surface, what you've been able to do. Honestly, it's amazing to me. It's very, very impressive. And also, at times, I'm sure, very depressing. So, both.
Sometimes it's a lot. And, you know, like right now, I have a very full plate, because I'm doing The View and I'm doing my plays. It's a lot.
So let's find out, how does stand-up come into your life? Because that's a big change from teaching English. It's a big change from GMA.
Yeah.
What made it happen? What was the impetus? And did you write your own material?
I wrote all my own material. I basically drew on my childhood and my Italian shtetl that I grew up in. I think that it came about, there was a moment in time when I wanted to get away from teaching, and I thought, I'll be either a therapist or a stand-up comedian. So I went to the Postgraduate Center for Psychoanalysis and Analysis, and I was going to enroll, and then I said, nah, this is going to take too long. And I need money. I was broke. I was divorced. I had no job because they fired me from GMA. And I said, I think I'm going to start to try to do some stand-up, because maybe I could make a living at that, because I was, you know, funny. People know when they're funny, you know, just like women know when they're beautiful. We also know when we're funny. So I thought, how can I translate how funny I am at parties to the stage? So I started going on stage, and it was brutal. It was brutal. You know, in the middle of the night, 10, 12 o'clock at night, I had to get up and go to work the next day. It was very hard to do. But eventually I started to progress, and I started a headline, and I became an actual stand-up comedian.
Well, I've spoken to, on the show, Amy Schumer and Susie Essman and Robert Klein, and all of them have one thing in common that I asked them about, were hecklers. They all liked hecklers. They weren't against hecklers. How about you? How did you feel about hecklers?
I did not get heckled a lot at all. I know they were heckled a lot. Robert Klein was heckled.
Oh, yes.
You know, he was my role model. If people ask me, who did you, you know, revere? It was Robert Klein, because he was very smart. He also used to talk about being a substitute teacher. His content was similar to mine. And I just thought he was very funny and very smart. So I liked him a lot. Hecklers, you know, Rita Rudner, also a wonderful stand-up comedian, she would just like, when they would heckle her, she'd be like, please, you've got to sit. She was very dainty. Just sit down, please. You know, she was like a dainty.
Well, she had her own way of doing it.
She was a dainty comedian. It was funny.
You know, Joy, when you were doing stand-up, there weren't a lot of women doing it at that time.
That's why there was one club in the Village called Comedy U. like Comedy University.
Yes.
And they had Thursday night, Susie and I were at that, and Carol Leifer was in it, Margaret Smith. They would only have women on stage that night. So you didn't have to follow these aggressive kind of guys who were doing great. Now, they were very funny, but you had a different kind of vibe in the room because they were respectful of women, maybe. And that helped us a lot, too. Paul Herzig used to run that.
Because both Susie and Amy talked about the fact that it could be really tough as a woman in these clubs. And I could see that would be the case. Not so much now in this world, but when you were doing it, it was a while ago.
Well, because they expect a man on stage. And when they see a woman, they don't know what to do with it, you know?
Right.
It's a little trickier. What, am I supposed to laugh at this or not? You know, they don't even know.
They
always say, don't be sexy on stage if you're a woman comedian, because the men don't know whether to have sex with you or to laugh.
Or the women may be laughing at the sex with the men.
So that's
a whole other story. Tell me about the theme. What was the beginning themes? The Italian neighborhood, the family?
I talked with a lot of things that were very, you know, close to my heart. I talk about how Italians, they would take me to the cemetery and say we were going on a picnic and visiting grandma and grandpa. And they would tell me, and I'd say, wait a second, they're dead. And they'd be like, don't bring us down, get in the car. I'd go to the cemetery, we'd have a picnic. And that was like a picnic area. There were trees and tombstones, because I was living in a tenement with not one tree in sight. So that was the picnic. And I thought that was absurd. So I used to talk about stuff like that. And then I talk about being married, because at some point I was divorced. So that was another area. So it was very personal.
And also, you wrote your first play with a great title.
What was that?
My ex-husband, my first ex-husband.
That's the one I'm doing.
You're asking me what you wrote first?
No, that was not my first play. My first play was a one-woman show I wrote called Me, My Mouth, and I.
Oh, well, that's interesting. They don't have that in chronologically order correct. And I blame them, not me.
Okay, it's not your fault.
Not my fault.
No.
But
I did that for several months at the Cherry Lane Theater about, what was it, 10 years ago? I don't know, 8 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk in terms of trying out for Saturday Night Live. That's quite interesting. Let's talk about that.
My girlfriend Jane and I came up with this character, Sadie Catalano, who would give news in the neighborhood. The two of us sat in our apartment in Queens, Forest Hills, writing this character. Like, only a hail of bullets marred the festivities as wedding bells rang for Concetta Rose Cacciatore, et cetera, et cetera. Former bodyguard Carmine Russo has become a faith healer. There isn't a cripple left in the neighborhood since Carmine has been pronouncing his miraculous words, walk or I'll break both your legs.
What a therapist.
So we had a whole bunch of these. And I said to her, now this is like out of the blue. We were both teachers at the time. I said, let's call John Head. We watched Saturday Night Live and it said talent coordinator, John Head, which is a double whammy of a name.
Yes, I'd say.
So I go to Saturday Night Live and I say, can I speak to Mr. Head? Mr. Head gets on the phone. And I say to him, oh, I'm Joy Behar. My girlfriend Jane and I wrote this material. He says, let me hear it. I tell it to him on the phone. Only a hail of bullets marred the festivity, etc. He says, I want you to come in and do the material for Lauren and this blah, blah, blah. What? I said, I was petrified, you know? So I go to the studio and they assemble the cast and Lorne Michaels is there and Gilda Radner and all of them, John Belushi, it was 1975. And I do the bit. And first I do it for Lauren alone. He doesn't laugh. Yeah. He said, that's very funny. That's funny. I said, you're not laughing. He said, I don't do that. Yeah. He just says if it's funny or not. Okay. And then in front of the whole cast, and they actually had me on the board every week. And then I got bumped every week because, I forget who they were now. The different people would be hosting. And I just was knocked out. I never made it on.
That's, oh my God, that must have been very unhappy for you.
I was so glad, Julian. I was so happy to not get on. I would have had a nervous breakdown if they had actually put me on television at that time. I was not prepared for that kind of like stress. And so every week they call me up and say, John Head would call me, you're not going to be on this week. I'd say, thank you, John.
Well, how about stage fright? Did you have it at the beginning with the going on?
Yes.
And because that's, I mean, I don't think people really truly recognize how difficult stand up is. But I mean, it's people sit there and it's basically make me laugh.
You know? Right.
Come on. And that's one of the reasons, as I've said many times, that the vernacular is I slayed them, I killed them, I murdered them.
Maybe that's the reaction that you have towards the audience. Yeah, I never
thought right.
That. That's true.
Yeah, that's why I'm talking to you.
I killed it. Yeah, Freddie Roman. I killed it.
So tell us about the stage fright and how did you overcome it, or did you never overcome it? Woody said he never overcame it.
I don't think I like with my plays now, which I'm sure you'll get to in a minute.
We will.
I don't have stage fright. I only have it with stand up. And if I have a lot of lines, the actor's nightmare, I'm not going to remember the lines. So you're scared. I mean, before I would get up and do stand up in the beginning, I would have stomach pains. I would have a headache. I'd be practically vomiting. It was difficult. I didn't like it. No. And I have a little bit still. You know, Laurence Olivier had it. Everybody had it.
Oh, Danny, yeah.
There were a lot of people, yeah.
Only one person I know in show business didn't. And I'll tell you a quick story. They went to Ethel Merman, and they said, Laurence Olivier throws up. He's really nervous. And some of the great actors, he says, are you kidding? If they could do what I could do, they'd be up here doing it.
Exactly. Now, that's confidence.
Yes. And you know that story.
I do. I do.
I wanted to give you a first run, but just another rerun.
No, but that's the kind of story that I would know, because to know that there's somebody out there who doesn't have these spilkers, you know, is unbelievable to me.
I think Billy Crystal doesn't. I don't know that, but I don't think he does. I'll find out one day and get back. I'll get back to you on that. So when did you decide that you wanted to write as opposed to perform? I mean, actually, you ended up doing both anyhow.
Yeah, well, I was an English major, you know, when I used to write I was in creative writing classes and I would write short stories. So it started early. And then my stand-up was all my own writing in the beginning. I didn't have writers. And then, I don't know, then I wrote this one-person show and I had slides and pictures and, you know, all that stuff. And then it just sort of morphed into playwriting. I don't know, I'm creative. I like to be creative.
Well, you've proven it. And we're going to keep talking about it on this show. Okay.
How long is this show? 4 hours?
Oh, you never stop. You tell Steve he's got to go out for dinner.
He just aged 5 years, the guy.
I'm so sorry, Steve. Anyhow, let's get to what we've certainly alluded to, and you've been so successful with The View. How did The View come to you? How is it working with Barbara? And I have got a great Barbara story to tell you, but you go first.
All right. You don't want to go first, huh?
No.
Okay.
I'll follow you.
Okay. When I was doing stand up, I needed to get some recognition here and there because you would do benefits, you know, and one of the benefits I did was they asked me to perform at Milton Berle's 89th birthday party at the Waldorf Astoria. And I was a big fan of Milty when I was a kid. Uncle Milty in a dress. Come on, he was so ahead of his time. You know, before, you know, all of these movies about, you know, transvestite or whatever it is, cross dressers, et cetera.
He was our first cross dresser.
He was. Yeah. And he was hilarious. I always found him funny. So I said, of course I would do that, you know. And so I did it. And Barbara was in the audience and Regis Philbin was in the audience. And I did a bit about Salman Rushdie. About how men can always get married, no matter how annoying and irritating they are. Like, take Salman Rushdie. He was in hiding. He had a fatwa on his head in hiding for 10 years. He managed to get married 3 times. So it was material like that that I think got Barbara interested. And she said to Regis, who is that woman? And Regis said, oh, she's a New York comedian. She had a radio show on WABC. And then from there, they asked me to audition for The View.
Oh, and how was that audition? Do you remember it?
Well, Star Jones was there, Meredith Vieira, Debbie Matenopoulos, and other people. I don't remember the others. All I know is that they would put us in different combinations, and the combination that stuck was the one I just said, Meredith, Debbie, me, and Star.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Now, Barbara was feared by some people. Others did not at all. Where were you in the Barbara situation? Were you friends? Were you?
No, I was friends. She invited me to her dinner parties all the time. I don't think the others were invited. I think I was the only one, maybe. She connected with me because her father was, you know, Lou Walters.
Lou Walters.
The great Lou Walters and the Latin Quarter and comedians. And I was a comedian. The others were not. So I think that that was the reason that she connected up with me. And I was not afraid of her at all, no.
Yeah. And did she run the show pretty much?
Well, Bill Getty ran it more, you know, but they played good cop, bad cop, the two of them sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. You know? But it was, I don't know if it was her idea, but she certainly was the one who championed the show initially, I believe.
She went door to door to the O&Os, you know, and tried to pitch the show because the network didn't want to pick it up right away. She went out there and she did her job. I'll tell you funny, you said, am I afraid of her? One time my office was right across from her and I heard her yelling at somebody. And she came, and after she yelled at somebody, she came into my office like a little girl. She said, I just was mean to so-and-so. Yeah. I said, Barbara, you go in there and you call him back and you apologize. She did.
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. Well, she did not have it easy. I mean, she really did not have it easy before she made it.
She had that horrible Harry Reasoner who was mean to her.
Yeah, yeah. And it just wasn't easy for her. But anyhow, we were at a dinner together, sitting next to each other. And I said to her, we were having a lot of fun together. And I said, and I didn't know her. It was the first time we had met. And I said to her, Barbara, I just want you to know you have some lipstick on your teeth. And you would have thought I had given her the biggest present that she's ever gotten. She said, I cannot thank you enough. There are so few people who would do what you just did. You don't know what, and I'm looking around like, what did I do? You got some lips. But it was like I had given her this great gift. And I remember thinking afterwards, yeah, I should be touched by this because this meant so much to her.
Because no one would say, no one's going to tell you have a booger.
Yeah, but unless I don't know if I'd go there. I'd go lipstick on the teeth. I can handle.
Wait, because otherwise they think that people are so fearful of them that they wouldn't tell them, and they allow you to go around with lipstick on your teeth rather than tell you. And you
right.
told.
Them. I did.
You should have been touched by that, were you?
I was. I was rather surprised by it and thought, well, she didn't ask me to be on The View, but okay.
Well, it was a female's show.
Yeah, I know.
The original was The View from here, and then she cut it down to The View.
Oh, yes. I want to ask you about, what if you're looking back on these 20-some-odd years on The View, going to be, as we said, 29, What are some of the highlights? What are a couple of where you felt you did something well or some what would you, when you look back at it and you had to pick a couple, say, well, these few things really did matter to me?
People always ask me that question, and it's always when Obama came on with Michelle. And that was before he was running for president. And I said, wow, these people are sane. They are sane. They're not crazy. You know, I was right. And I mean, that was, he took pictures with me. I called up my daughter. I said, get down here with the baby. And we all took a picture with him and Michelle. They were just lovely people. I so wish they were still there, but they're not.
So we talked about a highlight with Obama. Is there a kind of a thing where you kind of wish it hadn't happened, or there was something that you regret, or like Barbara came in and you said, go apologize? Did you have anything?
She invited me a couple of times. Those were not exactly the most pleasurable.
No, that's true. That's true. That wasn't something on the air, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, I got in trouble with Vice President Pence one time and I had to apologize to him on the air. I liked him, though. I spoke to him on the phone. He was very nice. And what else? I don't know. Who remembers?
Yeah. You know, on the web, it's so strange. They have you having fights with Clint Eastwood and Stallone.
No, those are all lies.
They're all phony.
They're all fake. I'm good clickbait. people seem to be interested in me for some stupid reason. That's why when I was out last week, there were all a lot of press about it. I don't know why they're so interested in me, but they are somewhat.
Now,
I think it's because I've been there so long.
I was thinking when you were doing the SNL Italian idea that you were doing, I wondered, did any of those get into the first or the play about my ex-husband? Did any of, because you had eight monologues, if I remember.
I have, there are eight of them and four actresses, or sometimes seven with three actresses, depending on the budget, I guess. But no, those did not, but they were, some of them were in my one person show. I kept them.
Oh, they were.
But these were real interviews with people. I didn't want to put my material here and there. I had a little bit of my material in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the idea of the we talked about Woody and the Farrelly brothers. Did you ever have a real role you wanted and couldn't get? Do you remember in film or in?
It was also in the Nora Ephron movie, This Is My Life.
You were in that though, weren't you?
I was in that again, a small part. But that was it. That's it for me, the movies, I think.
Yeah, but I'm saying, was there ever a role you auditioned for that you really wanted and didn't get? I'm saying.
No. I really didn't go up for a lot of auditions for movies.
Yes.
I was too busy working. I was always working, trying to make a living.
Well, you certainly in the last few years have figured out a way to make a living.
It took a while.
Let's think in terms of this comedy corner. Wasn't that an aspect of The View that you were involved with?
Yes. I mean, I thought of it. I think it was my idea to have comedians come on the way they used to do on Johnny Carson when I was a kid. And so we're doing it again now. Every month or so, we had this kid, Matt Friend, on last week, who imitates all the politicians. He's very funny as Trump, and also the old guy I can't remember anything anymore.
It's okay. I liken my memory to the tailor shop. When the clothes are going around and I'm trying to pull it off.
Oh my God. But you know, I used to have an incredible vocabulary. Now it's like the thing with the thing with the thing.
My mother, who lived to almost 99.
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell,
it's
right.
It's like a delay. That's what it is. There's a delay now in the
That's
marriage.
Right. Yeah. My mother, who lived to almost 99, said, you're going to get to a point where you say it begins with an L. And I think I've gotten just to that point. Let's talk about the radio show. You were on WABC. You were on for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I think you liked the idea of playing off other people, even though it was your show, right?
Well, I had a news guy sitting there with me. His name was Bruce, and he would do the news, and then I talked to him about it, and then I would have call-ins, you know. And it was interesting. That show was very interesting for me. I may have to go back on and do a podcast because it reminds me of the radio. I like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's very comfortable to sit here and chat with you. I like it.
I did too. I was on WMCA for 7 years.
Uh-huh.
I loved doing it and was calling too. Not on this show, I want to tell you why I stopped letting the call-ins talk to famous people, because I had Bob Hope, George Burns, Betty Davis, John Huston, Jack Nicholson. I had the biggest names. It was great.
Where are those tapes? You should put them out.
Have those tapes. I'm in negotiation now.
Good for you.
I'm glad I kept them. Okay, so let's talk in terms of...
But here's the thing about the radio. After I was off the air, guess who came on? Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, really?
Limbaugh?
I was on the station with Barry Gray and Long John Nebel.
I remember.
Yeah, yeah. They don't remember me, but they remember those two guys.
Well, you were known as a producer, Julian.
I know. Anyhow, let's talk in terms of, you had mentioned earlier about Klein being somewhat of an influence. Yeah. But when you were going out doing stand-up, I mean, there weren't too many women doing it.
Phyllis Diller, Toadie Fields, and Joan Rivers, basically, were, and a woman named Jean Carroll. Do you remember Jean Carroll?
Oh, yes, sure. I do.
Love being Carolus to watch her on the Ed Sullivan Show. For you, with the label, she was saying. And she was a beautiful, nice, she didn't have any gimmicks. She just went out there and talked.
Yeah, it was like, I guess in his own way, Sam Levinson just went out and kind of talked about that.
Yeah.
Well, Joy, there aren't many shows that close mentioning Sam Levinson, but I know you have to leave, and I'm really glad you'll be able to do part two next week.
Thanks for joining us on Julian Schlossberg's Movie Talk. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.